You are listening to selfdiscoveryradio.com with an orchard of wisdom just ready for your picking, filled with illuminating, inspiring stories. Do check out the community and the discovery stores. We are here for you. Our next show is... Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Their Story Matters. I'm your host, Sarah Troy, and my guest today is Valerie Silveira. Now, this is a tale that nobody wants to tell, but it's a tale nevertheless she is compelled to tell. She lost her daughter because of drug addiction. And obviously, that is something that nobody wants to do in life. You don't want to lose a child under any circumstances, but this is a child that got caught up in the drug addiction and indeed was shot twice on two different occasions. We're going to hear Valerie's story, her 13 years of hell, of going through this and trying to save her daughter. And what it has done now. She has these wonderful books, Still Standing After All the Tears, and also another book just called Still Standing, Wisdoms for Parents and Addicts. This has become her calling now, to help others go through this, because she doesn't want anyone else to go through the hell that she did go through. And if they are going through it, at least to have some tools and to know that there's somebody else there that cares. Addiction is on the rise. Why? Because we are in such turmoil in this world. There is such a vibrational disconnect. There is such static, and people just do not know how to cope with it. They're not taught to live from the inside out. Everything is the expectation piled upon them, and some people just cannot live up to those expectations. And sometimes it's just purely something that's chased them, maybe from a past life. The whole thing is, addiction is an escapism. It is an unwillingness or an unable to deal with the situation, and we escape. But we're going to find out so much more about what it is today through Valerie's story. I commend her and her courage in taking this path. One would not blame her for just curling up and saying, no, I can't deal with it. But instead, she's taken all these experiences and put them together for you, to help you pick up the pieces after all hell breaks loose. So welcome to the show, Valerie, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, you know, thank you so much for your courage and for your strength and deciding to take this path, because you'd already been shaken up and you'd already been through the hell. One wouldn't have blamed you for just taking that step back and healing, and yet you have decided to charge forward in helping other people with this battle, as the beast, as you call it, and to help other people through this. So first, let's just tell your daughter's story and just exactly what has happened that has led to all of this.
Okay, well, thank you again for having me, Sarah. I really appreciate it. It's an honor to be on your show. This is a very common story where it was the least likely person, mm-hmm. and that was really my daughter, Jamie. I actually called her Jordan in my first three books, just out of respect for her story, and I really kind of expected that she'd one day tell her story, and I wanted her to be able to do that for the first time under her real name, which is Jamie. So I just wanted to point that out for those who read the book, or any of the first three books, I should say. So, you know, when Jamie was about 15 years old is really when all hell broke loose. And she went from being probably the smartest person I've ever known, very, very gifted, very left brain, right brain, you know, super artistic, and she could sing and draw, but yet she was also incredibly quick-witted, funny, popular. She went to youth group. She was very athletic, played select softball, all of that. And it just, Sarah, it seemed like overnight mm-hmm. she just started to change. And, you know, at first we just didn't know for the long what was going on and how to stop it. And she, you know, because she was so smart, so crafty, whatever we had suspected, we had no proof, and she wouldn't admit it. So, you know, everything just started going sideways. She quit school, all of this stuff. And it was just really, that was devastating. And it's interesting when you go through these, what I call living on the roller coaster from hell, mm-hmm. the things that you think are devastating in the beginning, you look back on later and almost laugh, because, you know, what seemed devastating at first, once you walk through those things, you look back and go, wow, I wish that's all I was going through.
Yeah.
So she was kind of just went sideways, and When she was 18, it's 2001, and we're from Seattle, and this is in the Seattle area. We actually lived in Bellevue, which is across Lake Washington from Seattle, so nowhere near the city. And she had just made her way into this world that we didn't know. And one Tuesday morning, I came home from a breakfast meeting and was met by my husband delivering me the news that she had been shot. And she was shot by her ex-boyfriend. And to make a long story short, she was shot in the back, but it was an abdominal gunshot wound, and they're very fatal. And so she was literally filleted open from her breastbone to her pubic bone, like a fish. And they just spent hours cauterizing vessels and veins and just really trying to save her life, and they did. And, you know, this whole thing was so surreal, so incredibly unbelievable that I was speaking these words, Jamie's been shot. Mm-hmm. And so one night we were laying there in the emergency hospital where I stayed with her, and she said something she'd never said before. She'd never said it since. And she'd been very distant and cold and, you know, even angry. And I know she was in a lot of pain. And we were laying there in the dark, and she said, Mommy, will you pray with me? And, you know, that's not something I'm real good at, praying out loud. And, you know, that night I was praying like a Baptist preacher. And, I really felt that everything was going to be okay. You know, this was rock bottom for her. This was how much worse could it get? And so certainly this would be the low point, and I would get my daughter back. And I really, really did realize that I was going to need to put on my seatbelt and buckle down my shoulder harness, because my ride on the roller coaster from health was just about to get a lot worse. And so over the next decade, her life just spun further out of control. And without getting into the Jerry Springer episode here, you know, just things just kept getting worse and worse. And I kept trying harder and harder and harder to make her change, to make her get treatment, to make her do this, to guilt trip her, you know, every little trick I could think of, you know, treatments, all sorts of different things. And it was really at the point where it was probably about 3 years ago or so, where I was standing in my kitchen and I said to my husband, I just don't want to be here anymore. It's too hard. And I was never that kind of a person. I never thought about suicide. I never was a depressed person. And there I was. Mm-hmm. And I had been living, you know, with this dark cloud hanging over my heart 24 hours a day, every single day for 13 years. And it was just, I realized that I'd lost myself. I had no more hope, joy, peace. It didn't matter how I was acting on the inside. I was dying. I mean, on the outside, I was dying. On the inside. So it was kind of weird, Sarah, when I heard those words come out of my mouth, mm-hmm. it kind of frightened me that, you know, this is how I was feeling. And it didn't matter that I had a great husband and I had a son and a family and all sorts of things. All that mattered was that I was losing my daughter. And this is what is happening. Families are imploding. And, you know, every role in a family is important, but moms are the heart and soul of most families. And when mom is crying in the walk-in closet and self-destructing, you know, so goes the family. And so this is what was happening to my family. And when I heard myself say that, I just thought, I thought about my son. I thought about what he'd been through, losing his first best friend. And she hadn't been killed at this point, but it was, you know, he had, for all intents and purposes, lost her. Mm-hmm. And now he's watching his mom self-destruct. And I thought, no. This is not going to be my legacy. This is not going to be what he has to remember about his mom. So I didn't know what in the heck I was doing. I didn't know how I was going to get there or what I was going to do. There was no roadmap. I just knew that I had to stand up and fight, because it felt like I had this beast that, you know, had me down on the mat and had his claws around my throat. And he was just whispering in my ear that I was a terrible mother and I didn't deserve to be happy. And what kind of a mother would go on with her life while her daughter's sticking needles in her body? And what I guess I didn't mention is I did come to find out in those subsequent years that my daughter was indeed addicted to the very drugs they gave her in the hospital after her surgery, which was Oxy, and eventually to heroin. And so it wasn't that I was losing hope. I prayed for a miracle every single morning for my daughter. But I knew this is the reality that parents have got to face. And the reality is that we don't have control over other people's lives, including our sons and daughters, especially when they're adults. And, you know, if I had the ability, this is what I finally thought, if I had the ability to save Jamie from her beast, from herself, I would have done a long time ago. You know, if all it took were tears and money and, you know, all sorts of different things, it would be done. So this is the sad reality that we face as parents. And so I really stood up initially for the sake of my son, so that I decided, Sarah, that as devastating as my life was, I was standing in front of an opportunity. And that opportunity was to show my son, Sean, that no matter what is going on in your life, no matter how dark it looks, no matter how, you know, what you've been through, that it's possible to stand up and fight.
Yeah.
And so that's basically what I did. And I just, you know, put together, I just started using whatever tools and resources and things that I had learned over the years, nothing in particular, nobody's program, just I really almost miraculously, I came up with these things that I needed to do. And I started to do them. And then I started to realize I was getting a little better. And so I thought, maybe I should help others get better too. And when I published my first book, and it might sound contrived, but I really said to my husband, if this could just help one other person.
Yes.
You know, if one other mom mm-hmm. could get her life back and learn how to be happy again, it would be worth it. And it's obviously gone a lot further than that. And I'm hearing from people every single day that they're getting their lives back. And one of the things, Sarah, really what it is, and you kind of mentioned this earlier, is people need to first of all know that they're not alone.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter that we hear much more about addiction and we know that it's really impacting everybody. You know, it used to be that I felt like I was an awful mother. Obviously it was my fault. Because I used to say that, I used to stand on my soapbox and say, if your kids go astray, it's your fault.
Yes.
You know, and then it happened to me. Mm-hmm. So I know what people are saying about and thinking about other people. And I know the shame and the guilt and the stigma that society places on families of addicts. And so what people need is just somebody to provide, first of all, hope that it's possible. Second of all, a way to give themselves permission. And that not only do you have permission, or you should give yourself permission to be happy again, it's your right and it's responsibility. And so what happened along the way is I started to realize that not only was I showing Sean the way, but I was actually showing Jamie the way.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that wasn't my intent initially. And one of the last things she ever told me was how proud she was of me.
Yeah.
And so she was murdered last August. On August 28th, 2016, somebody, you know, shot her 5 times in the chest. She was unarmed. She was 5 feet tall. And nobody's been arrested. And
is there a reason why?
Well, because nobody's been arrested, you know, and they'll only tell you so much. The detectives can only tell you so much in an ongoing investigation. And at least, you know, here in the United States, it's a very long time for DNA. You know, it turns out it's not like TV.
Right, exactly. And yes, they have it back in an hour.
DNA.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. I wish it was like, you know, CSI. But it takes up to a year and a half to get DNA evidence back from the Department of Justice and in a murder case. And so, you know, we are still waiting for that, and we are praying for justice for Jamie. But, you know, this is another thing, Sarah, and one of my actions is to stop being a control freak, and it has a lot to do with forgiveness. And I call it the F word. You know, it's really the F word that's really hard to say.
Yeah.
And harder to do. And I learned the first time that I was going to have to forgive the guy who shot my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I was going to need to forgive her for not fighting hard, for all the lies and, you know, all the stuff. And I needed to forgive myself for any part I might have played in her journey. And I just needed to do it. And it's very freeing, and it is possible. And if somebody had ever told me years ago that I would be forgiving somebody, I don't even know exactly who he is. If somebody told me I'd be forgiving somebody who's still walking the earth, who is not paying for what he did, for taking my child, mm-hmm. I would have said you were nuts.
You have to forgive, though, because if you don't, it consumes you. You know, it was hate or something along that line in the first place that took your daughter's life. Hate is not going to bring her back. You know, there's a very big difference between forgiveness and still holding someone accountable. The forgiveness,
exactly.
The forgiveness is for you, because if you don't,
absolutely.
It will consume you. But that person still must pay the price. And that's, you know,
Right.
you know, that is the boundary that's there. The forgiveness is you were unable to help your daughter at that time, and you have to forgive yourself, and you have to forgive the person, not for the actions, but just if you don't, you're not going to be able to let go. And that hate will consume, and it really then hate begets hate, doesn't it? And that person has to take responsibility for what they've done. When he is caught, when the reason is there, you know, it could be random place. She was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Who knows? Somebody else's anger imposed upon her. As yet, that story is still to be told. But we all have to be accountable for our actions in our lives. But if we go about hating people for it, we can hate the action, but we can't hate the person, because you have no idea what their journey is that led them to that in the first place, right?
I totally agree. And I mean, this is what's interesting about when you go through something like I have and lived this path. If you choose, this is a big caveat, if you choose, excuse me, you can actually become a much better person than you ever, ever were before all the hell broke loose. And, you know, if you're willing to learn the lessons, if you're willing to rise to the occasion. And that's why I'm saying, if you would have told me years ago, I used to say, if anything ever happened to one of my kids, I'd be done.
Yes.
You know, just forget me. Just put me in a closet. It's over.
Yep.
And indeed, something very serious happened to one of my children. You know, my first love. You know, Jamie was my first love. And so, and I'm still here. And I'm still standing. So it's all about your choices and changing your thinking. And so here's the thing. Do I pray for justice for my daughter? I do.
Yes.
But believe it or not, Sarah, I don't even pray for it daily, not even weekly. I've decided that I'm not in the justice business. So we have a legal system. That's the justice system. And God is in the justice business, but I'm not. And so he took from me my first love. He's not going to take anything else from me.
Right. Amen. Absolutely.
And yeah, so that's how I'm, and I can say that with all, you know, well, I speak the truth anyway, but I mean, I can say that with, it's so hard to even describe to you what it feels like to have this kind of peace after such a horrific situation. But, you know, it's because I did all the work that I did before she died. So I knew how to get back up off the mat. I knew how to fight my beast. I knew how to stand.
In
a
way,
I was able to get back up quickly.
Yeah, in a way, it was kind of the universe preparing you, you know, between the first shooting and the second one. Is that
no question?
That, you know, this, you know, we all have a contract that we sign when we come to this world. And we are not knowing what that contract is. And some people are taken way ahead before the time. Some people live through hell. It was the kind of the contract that they wrote. Who knows why, what lesson they had to learn from it, what they had to teach because of it. And we cannot take on the journey they had because that was their journey. It's just the reflection it has back on us. You know, as a parent, as you said, anytime your child makes a wrong decision, you immediately question yourself, where did I go wrong? What did I do? What should I have done more?
Right. It's, you know, all about me.
Exactly. And what we have to understand is we raise our children to be independent thinkers, we hope. We raise our children to understand those boundaries. You step over, you're going to pay a price. Are you willing to pay that price? We teach them to listen to their instincts of don't go down that road. You might not be able to get back out, but still their journey is their own. And all we can do is shower them with love, with understanding, be there to pick them up when they fall, love them unconditionally, but we can still speak out against actions that they've taken. But we still have no control over their journey. And, you know, as
right.
much as some parents like to lock their kids away and dictate every move, that is still not, you know, you're still not in control of their choices. Their choices are their choices.
Right.
And as you said,
that's called a false sense of control.
Exactly.
We think, I say that, you know, when our kids are born, we're kind of, they come with this cape that we get to put on. It's a supermom cape. And, you know, sure, we use it, you know, they skin their bees or they get heartbroken when they're, you know, there's things, sure, we can use the cape for. The problem is, when you have that thing so tight around your neck, You know, I like to say my cape was tattered and ripped and torn and frayed, and, you know, it was stuck in my underwear and caught in doors, and, you know, but, and it probably hung me.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, we're kind of, you were talking about this in a moment ago about the control, and I really believe we're in an age where a lot of parents are in that, you know, they call them helicopter parents, and I think they're drone parents, really, where
yes.
we're so connected. The identity of a lot of parents are very connected to their children, their actions, choices, or lack thereof. And of course, how could you not be impacted if your child's life is going in that direction? You love them, of course. This is the price we pay for love on this planet. And so, you know, we're going to be sad and we're going to grieve and all of this, but finding a way to continue to love and have hope, but yet disconnect. I'm not saying to, you know, cut the love strings, but,
right.
you know, cut the cape strings so that we can realize that, yes, I'm the mom of an addict. And that right there, by the way, Sarah, is a very difficult thing to come to just that there. To be able to say those words, to say the word heroin and my daughter in the same sentence.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me to my knees. That was very difficult. So to be able to, and here's the other thing. I was talking with somebody about this yesterday. As the, you know, I wrote in Still Standing After All the Tears, one little section's called Nobody's Bringing a Casserole. And what that's about is when somebody dies, like when Jamie died, people brought casseroles. You know, they brought them in all sorts of different, you know, ways. But, you know what I mean by bringing a casserole?
Yes.
They brought food. They came around us. They supported us. They were there in our grief. I was already grieving. You know, the last 2 or 3 years I was, you know, doing pretty well, but so, but you could say 15 to 16 years before she died from the time she started her addiction until of grief. And so, you know, nobody's bringing a casserole while we're grieving day after day, week after month after year. And I'm not saying anybody's doing anything wrong. It's just the reality of the situation.
They don't understand that loss isn't when a person passes over. There's the loss of the child while they're still living. Hi, folks. We had a little interruption there. We've spipped over to a different juice. This is wonderful internet. But we were talking about forgiveness. And, you know, forgiveness is something that is really hard. Before we expect forgiveness from other people, which really they're not in a position to forgive or not, because that presumes you're guilty of something. But the forgiveness of self, because very often, certainly as a parent, you kind of think, what have I done wrong? Where could I have gone differently? You know, was it something I did? And then there's the child who knows that they've taken a different road, and they've got to forgive themselves or look for forgiveness from the parent for taking that journey. Sometimes it's just experimental that they go down, or, you know, influence of a boyfriend or friends. Just come on, try it. You know, it's cool. Don't worry about it. And then the next thing they know, they're hooked on something, or they're caught up in a spiral. And it's they feel so guilty for taking this path, they don't know how to ask for help. And as you said, your child was a straight-A student, you know, she excelled in everything, and all of a sudden, I call it the Exodus turn, where the head starts turning around, and they become this different person. And it's, where do you start from there? Because you can't, the first thing you want to do is kind of accuse someone, but who do you accuse? And then there's the bafflement of, how did they do this? You know, who's put them on this path? And then that atmosphere of everything kind of really doesn't lay anything conducive to actually a conversation, does it? Because it's reactionary.
Right. No, absolutely. But you know, we're people who we have inquiring minds.
Yeah.
You know, want to know why. Why is the big question? And I've asked why thousands of times. You know, why me? Why my daughter? Why Jamie? Why? It didn't make any sense. And who did it? And what's the cause? And you know, it's kind of interesting when you were talking about this whole thing about forgiveness and forgiving yourself. And I call it the F word, because it's a really hard thing to do.
Yes.
Especially to forgive ourselves. But one of the things, you know, we have to remember that everybody has free will. And so, but I think because we need to know why, this is why we point, it's easier as a mom addict to point the finger at myself than at my child. And what we end up doing is we try everything, Sarah. We do the guilt trip, and oh, you're missing out on this, and oh, yeah, this is what your life should be like, and you know, go through this whole drama. And when we put that kind of pressure on another person, when we're saying that I can't be happy, I won't have joy again until you fill in the blank, we are basically placing our happiness, our sense of purpose, yeah, peace, and all that is good in the world, and our entire path and journey and, you know, everything on the shoulders of another person. And that's not fair.
But it's also, they're already going through, a turmoil of, and now you're going to put this guilt trip on them.
Right. So they're battling this addiction beast. They're living with one of the most vicious beasts that a human being could possibly live with. And on top of that, they have the responsibility for mom's happiness too. And granted, they're connected. I mean, we can't deny that they're, you know, if this person weren't in this situation, that life would be much different. But so basically what I just kept waiting. You know, I just kept waiting for her to get better. I kept waiting for her to become clean and waiting for something to happen, something outside of my control to happen, so I could get back to the business of living my life and being happy and finding my purpose again and all that stuff. I just kept waiting, you know, and years go by and decades can go by and you're going, you know, I don't want to get to the end of my life, you know, hit the pearly gates and have God go, really? That was it? Yeah. You know, I gave you all these gifts and opportunities and me say, yeah, but you know, I all this horrible thing I went through. And, you know, everybody has a story. Sarah.
Yes. Yes.
You know, some people's lives are much easier than others. It's just true. And I don't know why. And it's not conducive to spend time figuring out why somebody else's life is or seems to be easier than yours. And, you know, basically we need to mind our own business. And so while our lives are very intertwined with other people's, and obviously, you know, my children being happy makes me happier, but it can't be the thing that makes me happy.
Yeah, I there's also this thing of where you have to draw the line. You know, I went through something with one of my kids, and I'm not going to mention names, but you know, there was a divorce, and so obviously, when you're going through a divorce, there is always that little bit of turmoil. Even though it was my kids that said it's time to divorce, right? But there's still, you know, that going through, and you know, one of my children tried to kind of pull what I call a daddy on me, kind of reacting the same way the father had, and that was the reason for the divorce. And you know, I said, no, boundaries. You know, I've left your father for that reason. I'm not going to accept that behavior from you. And sent them to go and live with their father for a while, you know, because see if you can pull that on him, you know. And we have to kind of at some point put that value boundary upon ourselves, because what I think people don't realize is when you have people that are addicted, whether it's drugs, which the thing about drugs is that there's no friendliness there at all. You know, drugs are like these things that crawl inside of them and get hold of all of their reasoning, all of their common sense, you know, just take over their thoughts and their rationale and consumes them when they get to that point in that addiction. But there are also so many other layers of addiction, and very often anger is an addiction. You know, people get angry because they get mad, they get angry, and they spend that, and they feel better because they've just verbally or physically beaten someone up, and they're addicted to that kind of adrenaline. And we have to put those boundaries out there, don't we, and say, no, I will not accept that. And you know, there is no communication with you on this level if you are like that. We have to do that not only for ourselves, but if you don't set the boundary, that abuse is going to keep coming back on you. It also reflects back on them that they also too can set a boundary upon themselves of what they're going to take. So we mirror each other. And this is why when a child goes off the rails, we look and go, what did I do? What did they see in me that they reflected back on themselves? But it wasn't you. It was somebody else around them that they're reflecting off, right? But how you react to it, though, how you react to it, that strength that you have. I love you, but I don't respect your choices. I'm there for you, but I'm only going to help you if you're willing to help yourself. You know, are boundaries that you can set the parameters of which to interact with each other.
Right. So what happens to parents of addicts, especially moms in my experience, is that we're basically driven by two things, love and fear. And so love is what keeps that supermom cape strapped around your neck, mm-hmm. you know, and fear. And so this is why this big enabling situation happens, where we're not willing to allow them to hit rock bottom, willing to allow them to walk out their journey, because what if? You know, the what if, I used to say the what if she dies? You know, what if I don't provide this and she dies? What if, you know, and what we have to get to a point of is that you're giving yourself a little too much credit if you think that you can control this thing.
Yeah.
And so for me, this is kind of interesting, because what people might judge, and it's okay, I don't judge back, so I'm fine with it, but people might not understand that how I could have done this, but I didn't see my daughter or hear her voice. I had communication with her very, very minor in a year and a half before she died, which really could have sent me into a bad place. You know, I should have done this. And, you know, I try not to live with coulda, shoulda, and woulda, though. But so the reason was, it wasn't necessarily me saying, you're out of my life, go away. It's what you just said, Sarah. Mm-hmm. It was me putting up boundaries. So I didn't have to say, you go off and I don't want you, blah, blah, blah. All the things that people are so afraid of saying. Rather, I would tell her every chance I got, you are not your beast. This is not who you are. Something that's attached itself to you. I believe in you. And I believe if you ever really try to stand up and battle your beast, that you can take it down. And I would tell her that I will stand with you every single time you do, every time you choose life. But when you choose death, I won't watch you die or help you die anymore.
Right. Exactly.
And so I just kind of painted the picture of my life. Okay. Yeah. So I worked really hard in my life to not be around chaos and drama. I had a lot of that in my childhood. I don't want to live in chaos and drama. My life doesn't include that, at least not, you know, by choice. And I don't choose to be around people who shoot each other, or drug dealers, you know, all of these things. This is not what my life looks like. Here's what my life looks like. And I want you in it, but this is what it looks like.
Yeah.
And so basically, out of respect for me, my husband, respect for us, she stayed away. But it didn't mean we didn't love each other. Our communication was so loving, but she knew that she was torn between these two worlds, but I'd made it known that was no longer welcome in my world.
We see this a lot. I've interviewed a lot of people who were drug addicts. And of course, they had to hit that wrong bottom, and you thought the first time round was it. But the Oxycontin, I've interviewed a couple of people that got caught on the Oxycontin. And, you know, then spiraled from the Oxycontin to be, you know, becoming slaves to the drug. You know, was one person said, I'm now sleeping with a gun under my pillow.
Sure.
You know, I'm dealing with it. I'm running from the cops. I'm doing all of that. And then it's, my God, who am I? This is not who I am.
Right.
This is what I've become. And, you know, finally he had a wake-up call. But it was the Oxycontin that got him addicted to that. And as you said, your daughter then onto heroin. You know, with another addict, it was that he made one hell of a lot of money. And came with that was the cocaine, then the heroin, because that was the lifestyle. And it's only when he hit rock bottom that he realized, you know, this is ridiculous. You know, I have been given all of these gifts. What am I doing? And, of course, now he set up a fund called the Ryan's Fund, where he actually funds the children of parents of addicts, because they get left behind, right?
Yeah, the innocent little victims,
yes,
right?
Exactly. And then another young lady was a school friend of my daughter's, and she had been what she calls a working addict, you know, alcohol, drugs, you name it, for 10 years, and in and out of rehab and everything else. And the last time that she went into, detox, she got into a cab and she said, normally it would be straight to the corner to get my fix. And this time she said, straight to therapy. I've had enough. And it was just, finally, she got to it. This is what I have to do. And she's completely clean today. Because she was willing to finally go and get the help she needs. But that's the problem with addicts and addicts. Until they get to that point where it's, I am going to fight the beast. I am going to stand up for myself. I am going to do whatever necessary to take back my life. You can't help them. You can love them, you can set those boundaries, but you can't help them until they're willing to help themselves.
Right, and there's a big difference between, that's why I used to tell her, Jamie, I love you today, as much today as the day you were born.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed. There's no change, you know, there's nothing you can do to change that. But unfortunately, you know, you mentioned this earlier, when the drug beast takes control, they, you know, he lies and he steals and yes. he cheats and, you know, he does all this kind of stuff. And he also knows how to manipulate very well.
Very well.
So he will use the very thing that you feel the strongest about against you, and that is your love for them.
Yep.
And so they will, you know, kind of make you think that if you don't do these things, you don't love them. So it becomes such a twisted...
sick.
It becomes... And so what ends up happening is that we become addicted to our addicts. Mm-hmm. To trying to save them.
Yes.
And we end up, I wrote this story in Still Standing After All the Tears called The Old Woman in the Cave. And it really was a fictional story of how I felt. We end up in a self-imposed prison staring at this old photograph of this one person. While on the cave wall, you know, are photographs after photographs of all the other people in our lives. But we're willing to forego all those relationships for this one person. It really becomes like an addiction. And you also brought something else up that I wanted to mention. And that is that while we feel so much shame and so much guilt, what's important for society to start to realize, and I believe it's finally beginning to happen, is the addiction beast doesn't give a rat's. Do you mind if I say?
No, rat's ass.
He doesn't give a rat's ass. Yeah, I'm really proud of myself. I only swore once so far. Okay, so he doesn't give a rat's ass who your parents are, how much money you have, what your socioeconomic background is, what your religion is. He doesn't care about any of that. Your education, the drug beast goes after anyone and everyone.
Right.
So while we're running around feeling like terrible parents, we have to, a thing happens to all types of people.
Yes. And while we're busy judging people, oh, that's just while the we're poor running and around the down judge. And out and the losers right. and the this and that. You know, that judge that's sitting yeah. on that thing is actually a secret addict. And this is another thing, you know, that this young lady, both of them working addicts before they crashed and burned, before, you know, it became the bottom line for them. They were working addicts. And it's how many people do we hear of that, you know, that are successful people. And then suddenly we've discovered they've been addicts forever. Right?
And this,
and exactly, way too much to be comfortable with, for that's for sure. So people always assume that addicts are the ones with the needles in the arm, in the street, selling their bodies, completely done up, because that's the way the media, you know, brings the picture. And of course, all movies and everything else.
Sure.
But they don't show us that addict that's in that power position. How many politicians, right?
Right.
That are the addicts that hide it very, very well. Will do anything to hide it as well.
And a lot of people can. My daughter was, well, she didn't hide it as well as she thought, but she didn't have drug charges. You know, she was able to kind of manage it at the level that she was at for quite some time. And a lot of people can do that for a while.
You're right.
Eventually it takes
it
over. You
yeah.
can't. But you know what's the thing about it is this whole addiction thing, and I'm glad that we're starting to have a lot of conversation about it, and you know, we need more affordable treatment, and there's just a million things we could talk about with regard to addiction. But I don't have the answer for that. I don't know that there's one particular answer. I do think that there are things that we can do. People do get clean all the time. So I think that, but I don't have the answer for that. But my place in this whole picture, Sarah, is helping families of addicts. I mean, the work that I do can help anybody with any kind of a beast, because that's the other thing too.
Yes.
Just because you have a child who's an addict and you think, okay, so I've got this codependent enabler beast. Well, if your child didn't become an addict, you already have some kind of beast. Let's face it. You know, you don't have 50 years or whatever it is on this planet and not have something. You know, we've all got stuff that we have to deal with. But in regards to, so let's just say moms of addicts in particular, because of course I can relate to them more than anybody, you know, we're dealing with a lot of stuff. And Here's the very, very, very best thing that a mom of an addict can do for everyone involved, including their son or daughter who lives with that beast, that addiction beast. The very best thing they can do is to stand up and fight to get their life back, to become a woman of courage and demonstrate what that looks like. Because I spent, and I deal with, you know, moms all the time, and this is what they're doing constantly. You need to get clean. You need to fight harder. You need to stand up. You need to do this. You need to blah, 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 blah. And, you know, really, an addict would have every right to turn and point the finger back and say, well, what are you doing about life?
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, we've talked about blame and forgiveness, but you're saying a big statement here is that where does addiction come from? Sometimes it could just simply be a gene in the body where people, you know, people who are sports people, adrenaline junkies, that's an addiction. They've got to get out there and have their high. Your Navy SEALs and things like this. I've interviewed a great deal of veterans who are saying that they keep going back because of the adrenaline rush. It becomes an addiction.
Sure.
Right, living on that high alert vibration all the time, which is also deteriorating them on so many levels. And then when they come back, then they turn to addiction because what else matches that? Right. Everybody has an addictive nature. You know, are you addicted to coffee? Are you addicted to chocolate? Are you addicted to your soap operas? You know, when it's something, oh, I can't do without that. Well, you know, there is an addiction to something because you've got to look at it. Why can you not do without that? What is it replacing? So when somebody points a finger back at you, is it every single person in their self-discovery of life is going, trying to find that balance, that equilibrium in life where we honor ourselves from the inside out and we live the authentic life. But we can only do that through journeying in life. And everybody's given the cosmic 2x4 along the way. You know, yours was your daughter. And the journey that she went through has now become your platform and has become not only your healing, but the healing of others. So again, it's written in that contract, and how we get there sometimes can be very cruel, but it's the purpose that we're here for. And as soon as we acknowledge that, the more that we can embrace it and stop fighting it.
No, you're absolutely right about that. And that is one of the difficult things to do, is to think, you know, I have this friend who is in Australia. She would be a great person to have on your podcast. Her name is Rosalind Saunders, and she is a codependency expert. And she's really an expert mainly because she was a codependent for so long.
Right, exactly, exactly.
But with, you know, just all the addiction that came in, you know, living in the big house while her husband's drinking himself to death, and same thing with her parents, on and on. Mm-hmm. Four kids who are addicts, all four of them, you know, really, you talk about, you know, it's funny you say that because I describe it as the 2x4 in my book that whacks you over the head, and you call it the cosmic 2x4. I love that. But so she's a lot of 2x4s, but what's really interesting when you listen to her is she says, my children's addictions have been a gift. Now, if you just heard that without context and conversation,
yes,
like we're having, you think, wouldn't she foster mine?
Yeah, 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 exactly.
She didn't say she would choose it.
Right.
She didn't say she wanted it. But she is a person that has decided to take everything she can from the lesson. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really incredible to think that some of us are doing that. And so the more of us that can stand up, every person that stands up, there's a ripple effect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, every woman that I witness who is standing up, and here's the thing too, Sarah, that I think anybody who stands up after something has gone wrong or the 2x4, I have respect for anybody who really overcomes, stands up, anything. But I have a special respect for those of us. I never could have said that about myself. I would feel like I was being, you know, not very humble, but it's true. It takes a lot of courage to stand up in the middle of the storm. And so what I'm working with is people who are still going through the storm. You know, it's not like it's afterwards. Now let's pick up the pieces.
Yes.
We're trying to pick up the pieces while the effing storm is still raging.
Right.
You know, and there's another one. It's like this last hurricane season, and there's another one coming.
Yes. Yes.
And really, that is exactly when we need to stand up.
I mean, you know, I've got a whole saying right now is that the universe is shaking us up to wake us up for us to step up, to change it up. And, you know, this redirection, these cosmic 2x4s, this whole, you know, throwing people into this hurricane of life is for us to shake up, to wake up, to step up, to change it up, because we know that our system in society is what's at fault here. You know, this is the problem is, and it's inviting us to step up and change things. And, you know, it's happening one story at a time. I mean, this entire premises of Self-Discovery Radio here are people that have survived the cosmic 2x4, who have gone through the hurricanes, you know, the earthquakes, you name it, and have come out the other side a better person with a meaningful purpose that now helps others going through the storm. And that's community. And this is the thing. We've got to stop with the judgment and the finger pointing and, well, what did you do wrong? And start going at, how can I support? How can I understand? How can we as a community come together and help this healing process? And not only to the adult, but to the parents, to the children, that, you know, the siblings that are left behind there. It's got to be a unity community, hasn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, and if it, it's kind of interesting, if it weren't for Jamie's addiction, back to what my friend Rosalind said, if it weren't for Jamie and her addiction, I would still be a judgmental person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that about myself. And I'm so grateful that I got to learn that lesson in this life.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, we don't know what her contract is. You know, I had one mom who's lost her son and he committed suicide and he had tried to do it beforehand. And she knew. We were on borrowed time with him. He was walking the tightrope and we knew one day he would come off it. And that was just his journey. And we've got to stop taking this, you know, we take being a parent very, very responsibly, right? But we've also got to stop putting all this pressure upon ourselves of trying to save a child that has chosen a path that we can't walk with them.
And right? We don't understand.
You and know, we don't understand. They don't understand it either, right? Don't understand. It's only when you've gone through the storm and come out the other side you understand why you went through the storm. But while you're in the storm, you don't know how you got there.
Well, and that's what I'm trying to do is to get to a point where I get some meaning during, you know, during the lessons, because if we can cross over to the point where we're actually learning the lessons during, now that's super powerful.
Yes. You know, they become tools, they become wisdom that can help you through faster or bring it to a conclusion quicker. I mean, this is the whole thing. Why wait until it's all over, right?
Right. Well, you know, life is just one series of lessons after the other. Yes. And we're always in school. And another thing I write about is, you know, stop skipping school. Because what happens is life has a way of throwing you right back into the class until you learn the lesson.
Yeah.
You know, so learn the lesson and move on to the next class, you know. So I just think that as awful as the circumstances have been in my life, I'm actually grateful and even excited about the opportunity. I mean, I very humbly, I'm so honored to have an opportunity to take my story, my wisdom, and link arms with other people and their wisdom and their stories and make a difference.
I mean, it's not just about drug addiction. It's about any form of addiction, isn't it?
Right.
You know, it's obviously there's alcoholism, but there's also dieting. You know, how anorexia, bulimia, you know, these are all forms of addictions. It's a lack of self-worth that people then choose to destroy themselves. And they don't, you know, they don't go, I'm going to destroy myself this way. You know, why do addicts step into this addiction in the first place? In the case of your daughter, the second time round, the Oxycontin. Such an addictive drug. We've had an thing of it here, where it's just become an epidemic, and it's you know, we have to really look. Why has it become an epidemic? How do they get them?
Well, yeah, they hand them out like candy. It's not hard to get.
Yeah.
Opiates. Yeah. You know, that's a whole nother story. Don't even get me started on that.
Well, that's another show. There would definitely have another show there, because that's again, it's like. I'm sure you asked it. How is she getting these drugs? How is she getting it? Who is she going to? How is it so easy to get? Because it's always that if we understand the how, can we stop it? But we can't stop it as an individual. We can only stop it when we come together and say, this is where it's coming from, and this is what we have to do as a community to say no.
Well, and this is why it's so important to me as well to help build up women of courage, because my mission is not to do anything specifically of the drug industry. However, you know, if and when, whatever I need to be a voice, I'm available to do that. I just don't get caught up in that direction because I know it will take me off my mission. Mm-hmm. For every mom that I can help to stand up and become strong, I'm watching this, I'm witnessing it. They're going out into the world and doing things.
Exactly.
And so some of them, because I, you know, sometimes I'll say to my husband, oh my gosh, you know, it's, if we didn't have the drug problem, they wouldn't need my stuff. Well, they probably still need my stuff because, like you said, there's still addictions, but, and there's still problems. But the point is, like, well, the core of the problem, I'm kind of like a core of the problem person. Maybe I should be out helping the addiction problem and everything. And then I think, listen, stay focused on what you're doing.
Yes.
Because for every woman of courage that you build up, for every person, some of them will just get better and live a happy life. Praise the Lord. I mean, that's fantastic. But some will go out and cause that ripple effect.
Yes.
You know, I'm witnessing it. I'm watching it. I'm seeing people who are going out and doing different things within months of them being laying down on the mat, thinking their life was over. And by the way, the storm's still raging.
Yes.
But they're standing up and making a difference. So for all of us, the stronger we can become by linking arms together, by helping people to believe that they're worth it, that they have the courage inside of them. It's just gotten lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically that's what I did with these 9 actions to battle your beast. Can I just say
yes.
briefly what they are?
Okay. Please do.
So action number one, these aren't, you know, steps like the 12-step program or anything like that. My logo is the puzzle heart is because it's like a puzzle. All of these things work together synergistically and they're interdependent, can be focused on separately, but they really all work together. It's not like you do one thing and then you do another. This is a lifelong thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, to keep it together, especially when you're living with addiction in your family. So action number one is to decide to stand up and fight. And we could argue all day long which of these actions are more important or not than the others, but I purposely put this one as the first one because if you don't first decide, you're never going to do anything else. You know, it's all about we decide to do something, then we take action. And so deciding to stand up and fight means, yes, an initial decision that you're going to stand up and fight no matter what it takes, no matter how long it takes, and you're going to stay in the battle for as long as it takes. But importantly, that every single time you're knocked down, you're going to get back up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a one-time thing. You know, obviously, when the coroner's office came to my door, you know, I was knocked flat on my back again. And I had to decide that I was going to stand up and fight. And, you know, I get opposition to my work and my mission all the time. And I get self-doubt and, you know, all the stuff that happens
yes.
to us. So we decide all the time. Action number two is to get on your spiritual armor, and your spiritual armor can look very different from mine. I'm not here to debate what the spiritual armor looks like, but I firmly believe that this is a spiritual battle as much as anything else.
100%.
And so we've got to have our spiritual armor on because, like, this thing is big. You know, these things we're dealing with are bigger than us. They're not bigger than us, and they're not bigger, you know, so we've got to have that spiritual armor on, and that's a whole, you know, there's different aspects to that. Action number three is to put on your oxygen mask.
Mm.
And, you know, for moms of addicts, it's, you know, you don't even have your oxygen mask anymore. You've lent it out. It's, you know, somebody else has got it on their face. And so it's all about giving yourself permission to go and get it back. Because, you know, the oxygen mask that we're all assigned, they're actually for us to breathe our own oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
We're actually not supposed to be putting it on other people's faces.
Right.
So, you know, this is the taking care of yourself physically and emotionally and all that. Action number four is to build your circle of strength. And this is really cool because there's a little diagram in there that shows the different areas of our life. And here's what we do, Sarah. I'm sure you can relate to this. We place people in the inner circle is the core of this. And then there are four rings. The outer ring I call the ring of fire. So from the inner circle, those are the most, you know, people that you should be the most influenced by. The ones that encourage you and lift you up and empower you and kick you in the butt a little bit.
Right.
You know, they don't allow you to live in the pity party. Then there's all the way out to the ring of fire, which is, you know, people who are just really difficult to be in a relationship with and you'd rather not be in one with. So it's really about analyzing where are you trying to shove people? Because we do this all the time. We say, well, you know, this person belongs in my inner circle because they're my sister, you know, but she's very cynical and negative. Well, she doesn't belong there then.
Right.
So quit expecting her to act differently than she does.
Right. So build your own tribe. Yeah.
Yeah. So it has to do with managing expectations and building up, you know, building up our relationships. Action number five, right at the center, is to change your attitude. And truthfully, if you did nothing but change your attitude, you'd have a better life. And that is what I call your battle changer, because your circumstances can be exactly the same. You change your attitude, it changes everything. And then action number six is to adjust your focus. And this one is kind of funny. It comes with a warning. It's a social media warning. And it says, lives lived out on social media may appear better than they really are.
Yes, yes.
And this is where, when you're going through hell, you know, you're on that roller coaster from hell with the beast at your side yakking in your ear, and you jump social media, it appears that everybody has a perfect husband and they go on vacations 51 weeks of the year and they swim with the dolphins and they, you know, drink the best wine. You know, they have
yes.
the best clothing.
No worries at all. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So our focus, we really get out of focus in a couple of different ways. We think people are having lives they're not, number one. Number two, we focus on our problem and it becomes so magnified that we become the old woman in the cave. And action number seven is probably the hardest for parents of addicts, and it's to stop being a control freak.
Yeah.
It's using the F word that we talked about already, and it's taking off that cape. Very, very challenging, but so freeing. Action number eight is to stand on your story. This is where we start to shed the shame and the guilt, and we refuse society's stigma, and we become better people, not in spite of our story, but because of it. Very, very, very powerful. And the ninth action is to make meaning from the madness. You know, this is what I'm doing. This is what people like you do. You know, we make meaning. Mm-hmm. It's like my friend Rosalind I told you about. We make meaning from the madness. We step outside of our stories, outside of our stuff, and start to make a difference. So those are the nine actions to battle your beast, and I detail those in Still Standing After All the Tears. And then there's a workbook which really helps people get in there and really work it and get that stuff going in their lives. And I also have what's called the Still Standing Sisterhood, and it's a membership platform. So it's all sorts of audios and videos and video conferences and basically, you know, a go at your own pace yet guided self-recovery, I guess you would. It's really building up women of courage.
Right.
With me guiding them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm constantly coming up with all sorts of, I mean, I've got so many things that we need to do. We are working on to bring these tools, because what I found, Sarah, is that when I got up to fight, I didn't have anything. I didn't even know what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
You know, there was no roadmap for me.
Precisely. Now you've created one for others, and that's the whole point of it is we learn more from people who've taken the journey. Now, is their journey absolutely identical? No, not in its, you know, actual path. But when we actually look at the shoes that you needed for that journey, the tools you needed for that journey, you know, the backpack you needed for that journey is going to be the same. And when you've had somebody else who could hand that on to you and say, here, wear this on your journey, you've got everything you need in there. You know, you now can take that journey a little more fortified. And that's the whole point of it. It is somebody else's story, maybe similar to yours, but the fact that they've actually, you know, developed these skills, these tools, this support, this understanding, that's already in your backpack to help you on your own journey. And that is what it's about.
Right. Well, it offers to people, you know, I hear this occasionally where somebody will say, I wish I could be as strong as you are. And here's what I tell them. I used to wish I could be as strong as me too.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's not like I was born with some magical powers.
Right.
You know, I've been doing it longer. I've probably been knocked down more times. I've been putting this stuff into action. That's the difference between you and me. I'm doing it. That's all.
And, you know, we've also got to understand that, you know, where you are right now is, you know, a many-year journey that you've taken to doing this of action, right?
Right.
And you know, if you first have landed yourself in it and it's like, as I say, you're in the hurricane, you know, you don't know what to do. It's understanding that, you know, it's now implementing these tools this system that's going to help you, you know, get through the hurricane. It's not looking at like, well, I'll never be like her. It's like, no, you're going to become like yourself. But the similarities is the woman of courage, of strength, of fortitude, where now has the ability to help somebody else go through whatever they're going through. So you've got to be willing to take the action. You've got to be willing to take the journey, because this is just as much your journey of life as it is the lives of your children or the person who's, you know, an addict.
Right. That's exactly what I was just going to say, is that you have to be willing to take, it's all about taking the action, because what people are waiting, they're waiting for somebody to just change so they don't have to change.
Right.
You know, like I always say, nobody's going to come along and sprinkle magic fairy dust over you and suddenly your life's going to be okay. You know, you can't sit down at a piano and play a concerto.
Yes.
You know, you got to learn how to play chopsticks first.
Yeah, exactly.
It takes work. And not to mention, we're, not only are we learning to do something, we also have to undo a lot of bad habits.
Absolutely.
You know, where we're self-sabotaging ourselves all day long, talking to ourselves, negative thoughts, you know, admonishing ourselves, beating the hell out of ourselves. Those are habits, and we have to break those habits.
I mean, thoughts do become things, another show that we've got coming up here, a new host. And it is, we've got to watch our thoughts, because we're not only telling the universe those thoughts, but this is what we're telling our psyche. Oh, I'll never be able to do that, or this will never happen, or that will never happen, or I can't do it. Well, that's what you've told, you know, your inner self, your outer self, and that's what it will believe. But if you say, you know, I can do this, I just need to discover how, and I'm open and ready to receive that how and take right. action accordingly. You know, the beautiful thing that I love about doing these shows is women like yourself, you never knew your strength, you never knew your courage, you never knew your purpose in life until you were willing to take this journey. And who you've become now, even though it's through the tragedy of the loss of your daughter, will save lives for other people so they don't have to lose their children. Or if they do, they know how to cope with it. That strength and that courage is something we need to celebrate, because we've all got the capability of it, but only if we're willing to go through the storm.
Yeah. And you know what I think? I firmly believe, too, that Jamie would be okay with that. You know, if part of the story had to be, you know, this, her 30 years on this earth and, you know, ended in this tragedy. But the fact that, you know, she gets to go with me.
Yes.
On this journey, Jamie would go. She would say, okay, if this needs to be what it is, then that's fine. And so, you know, this, I don't believe in, you know, that God said, I'm going to put this little girl on the earth and she's going to be really, you know, I'm going to make this horrible life for her. It was more like, you know, we have choices too. We have free will. But let me just not stop this thing, because it's going to be part of the story. Because, you know, that this could have been stopped. There could have been enough events for her not to be shot that day. But I really just think it was needed to be part of the story, as painful as it is. Mm-hmm. But here's the other thing too, Sarah, is that I didn't understand grief to this degree either. And, you know, here's what I finally done with that as well. And in my new book that's coming out too, it's called Misery, You Don't Get My Company, I talk about this. I finally realized that I am always going to live with a hole in my heart. That's just what it's going to be, because she was my daughter.
Right.
But it's okay.
Yes.
Because my heart is big and I can exist the rest of my life with that hole. And the good thing about the hole is it's always a reminder of how much I love her.
Mm-hmm. And how much you are keeping her alive now through the work that you're doing.
Right.
You've given her a sense of purpose now, because her story is how many people's story out there. And, you know, we have become, especially in, I think, North America, such a disposable society. We throw everything away, right? Oh, it's broken, I'll get a new one. And that's, you know, now come to life. And it's like, no, we are not disposable creatures. And we're, nor are we just meant to be fixed. You know, it is about repairing our life to become even better than what we were. But, you know, when you relook at something and say, I'm going to remodel this into something that is even greater than what it was, we discover things that are absolutely mind-blowing. So we have to stop such a disposable society and throwing people away just because they're flawed right now. Who knows what they could become if we nurture them, love them, help them through this, because that really is the beacon for what to build in the future.
Yes, absolutely. We're all flawed anyway. I mean, I mean, compared to what? That's the thing. Is like, what's the measuring stick?
Yeah, what's normal, huh?
I don't even want
it. If it is, I don't want it. Right, exactly. I'm uniquely me. And that's something we have to stand tall in, is right? Is that I'm not going to be everybody's cup of tea. These shows aren't going to be everybody's cup of tea. They're for the people who are ready to hear, right? Ready to truly listen. And the thing is, as you said, your mission is to help the parents that are going through this, because this is the gift you were given. You were given it a hard way, and it's only for going through the hurricane yourself that you can truly understand what other parents need. You couldn't have done this by learning on a manual or standing on the side. You had to go through the hurricane, because now you can truly and utterly relate. Every single one of us is given a special gift. And that gift is given, you know, is given through a journey of life that where we understand what that purpose is and what we're really here to do. And we need to own that. And as you say, that's your forte. You're not here to kind of correct the drug system. You could certainly shed light on it. But for somebody you may help, that may be their calling.
Exactly. I mean, when I talk about that part of this journey, Sarah, I get so excited, because so much positive change can happen in this world if enough people can, you know, go out and do what their mission is.
Yes.
But what's happening right now is, you know, families are imploding because of addiction. So, I mean, the addiction side of it, the person who is under the control of the drug beast and they're self-destructing, it's sad. Don't get me wrong. It is incredibly sad. But when you look at the domino effect of, you know, not only is mom or dad sad, they're also missing their purpose, because they're not out doing what they were supposed to do on this earth, because they're literally, you know, they're paralyzed. They live in paralyzing fear.
Yes. And let us not, you know, forget how many families come through this hole, because it becomes the blame game. Well, you raised her this way, or you did that, or you didn't do that. And then the two parents are blaming, and now the other kid and says, well, what about me? Do I not count? Do you not love me? And so, you know, the shattering effect goes all through the family. And it's, how do you keep that family together? Because all of you are going through this. All of you are going through it, and all of you are going to react to it differently. But playing the blame game and not supporting each other is the worst thing that can happen.
Absolutely. We can't, you know, it's kind of funny. I talk about sometimes about, we look at what's going on in the world, and there's definite, you know, realities and fears and, you know, scary things going on in the world. But, you know, we're imploding from the inside out, starting with the family. And I just get so critical. I don't think we've ever been in a time, and granted, I've only lived so long, we've never been in a time where I believe we need to build up women and men of courage like now.
Yes.
And, you know, and courage looks a lot different than a lot of people think, because I'm not talking about, oh, we just got to fight, fight, fight. Yes,
nope.
It is a fight. It is a battle. But courage also looks like peace, and courage looks like using that F word. You know, there's a lot to be, it's also about shedding the shame and standing on your story and standing up and claim, this is my life and this is part of my story. And yes, I've got a son or a daughter that's living with a drug beast, and okay, it's part of my story. You know, this is what courage looks like.
And you know, the more we do, the more we change the face of everything, the more empathy and understanding comes into place. And you know, the more you defuse all that judgment, because it now becomes, oh, I didn't realize that. Oh, well, I guess there isn't any blame. Oh, I see this. And the more we talk about it, I mean, the worst thing you can do is hide in shame of a child or a family member being an addict, because now you're hiding and supporting their addiction, and you're taking blame for it. So no, it's stand up, own it, ask for help. Ask for understanding, ask for support, because this is exactly what you're absolutely right. The world at the present moment is saying we need to rise up together, not with pitchforks and arms, but in arm and arm, black, white, polka dot, pink, yellow, no matter what the circumstance of your life is, and come together as a community and help one another. Because we are only as strong as we are together, and we're only as strong as we step into our own self-love, love of life, and bring that peace about that we're all looking for. It's an inside job.
Right. And every person that rises up and links arms, I get so excited, because I know that You know, like I tell these women all the time that, you know, you look at me and you see hope, but somebody else is going to look at you and see hope.
Yes. Yeah. You're just a reflection of what they can become.
Right.
If they're willing to take the journey. But, you know, see, there's no downloadable app. There's no quick pill. There's no quick solution. It's a journey. And some journeys are going to be faster than others, but the point is you've got to be willing to take the journey. So make sure you've packed right for it, and that's with the tools and the skills of somebody else who's gone before. You won't go hiking a mountain in flip-flops, right?
No, exactly. Good point. I like that.
So you've got to make sure that you have the right things in your backpack on this journey. And you know, why do most people become paralyzed? Because they don't know what to do next. But when they've heard somebody who's done it, who is doing it, who is living through it, who is now sharing it and sharing all those tools and skills, all of a sudden they don't feel alone. They feel somebody else understands. And now you've shared actually what they need to do in order to move forward. You know, that breath. Right.
And they also can't say to somebody like me that they can't.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Because they can say that to their family, their friends. They can say, but I can't. You don't know how hard it is.
Yeah.
And I can say, but I do know how hard it is. I do know that you can do it.
Yeah. Precisely.
So, yeah, when you've gone through something, you are definitely in a unique position to not only provide hope and a roadmap, but also, you know, people also need a little bit of a kick in the butt. They also need to be held accountable. They need to, you know, everything can't just be, oh, I get it. I understand. That becomes a pity party. They also need somebody that says, come on. You know, make that decision.
Yeah. And, you know, in a way, when you think about it, this has always been about your story and your meaningful purpose. And the person to show you and teach you that story and that purpose was your daughter.
Right. Who would have ever known? Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It was less about her life and more about the life that she's led you to.
Well, this is what's interesting. I told you that I called Jordan in my first three books and before her death, because I thought, you know, respectfully that she would one day, she wanted to be a counselor. And I thought, you know, she's going to tell her story, maybe write a book, do whatever, maybe speak on a stage with me. And what's kind of interesting about it is that she is now, through my work, touching more lives than she probably ever would have had she been
she's
a counselor.
Still well, no, she is a counselor. She's
right,
a counselor,
but I mean, not physically
you.
On this earth.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So I know that she smiles about that. I know,
exactly.
You know, she loves that people know about her all over and that people say to me, I like to think that, you know, Jamie's an angel and she's looking after my son or she's looking after my daughter, you know, and Jamie would love that. And I'd like to believe that she is.
Right. And in the cosmic world, which I'm very much immersed into, ascension is just leaving the body and ascending onto another light, another energy level. And for many, many people, they stay in that energy level and become that energetic support and counsel and, you know, mother and daughterhood in your case, on your journey. So she's more with you now than she was when she was alive.
Yep. Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, you never really know what's up around the next corner, do you?
Nope, you don't. And, you know, this is the thing about life. As you said, we can't go, why me? You know, it just is. You know, it just is, folks, you know. And it's you have to deal with it, but you don't have to deal with it alone. So would you please tell people how they can get hold of you, what programs you've got for them right now, all the books and et cetera?
Okay. You can go to my website, which is valeriesilveira.com, which is S-I-L-V-E-I-R-A. Oh, you've got that on the link there,
yes,
right?
Yes, but for people who are only listening to the audio.
Okay, so valeriesilveira.com. Also, Valerie Silveira, author speaker, is how you can probably just type in my name on Facebook and find my Facebook page. On my website, definitely people should sign up for my free emails. It's weekly inspiration. I hear back from a lot of people that those are really helpful to them. And my books are all on Amazon. And obviously, there's a link on my website to that, too. Like I said this earlier, the Still Standing Sisterhood, you can find on my website or directly at stillstandingsisterhood.com. And that is my membership platform. And we're actually going through a little bit of a change right now on that. But it's obviously, it's available. And it's a way for me to work with people, not one-on-one, but the next best thing, through audio and video conferences, private Facebook group, and just different tools and resources to, and also linking arms with other people. Mm-hmm. That's a critical part of this Still Standing Sisterhood, is that you get, I learn every day. I swear it's amazing the things that one woman will say to another on a post in Facebook or something in this private group, just the wisdom and inspiration I get from them. So not only do you have these tools and resources from me, but you get each other. And each other, that is a very powerful part.
That's the community
of that program, right?
Exactly.
We also just started doing live events, which is called Still Standing Live. And we had our first event in Seattle. That's where I'm from, in September. And we're going to be in Phoenix at the end of January and then in Philadelphia in April. So just a lot of different things that we are putting together. And again, my first book is called Still Standing After All the Tears, and the workbook has the same name. Then I have Still Standing 90 Days of Wisdom Moms of Addicts. I know that image says Parents of Addicts, and obviously I gave you a wrong image because the book actually ended up being called For Moms of Addicts. And then my new book, which is Misery, You Don't Get My Company, and we're hoping to publish that by the end of the month. And that people can even pre-order, but basically either through Facebook or on my website, you can find all of my resources and tools. And I do Facebook Lives quite a bit. And guess what, Sarah? I'll be starting my own podcast channel as well. And so that's coming up too.
Wonderful. Well, great. You know, the more we can get it out there, the more people understand they're not alone, the more people who are given tools and the knowledge of what to do, you know, and understand there is a community that's safe for them to go to, you know, the more we encourage that strength and courage that we know it lies within each of us. And as I said, you know, your journey was your daughter laid a platform for your purpose and your journey. So it's going to help even more people. And she, as you said, she's working with you now. And that's the beauty of it, you know, and her life is meaning more now than it was in her life where she was caught, you know, up in that horrible spiral. So that's the thing, is to understand. And you're not just talking drug addiction, it's any form of addiction. Because, as I said, you know, anorexia, bulimia, obviously alcohol, any sex addiction, which is
perfectionism.
Huge. Perfectionism, yes. You know, this insecurity of, you know, being important, you know, all of this type of thing are addictions. And the more we actually understand, you know, how we can help our kids, but also how we can empower ourselves. You know, it's the old oxygen, isn't it? When you get on a plane and that oxygen comes down, it's oxygenate yourself first, because you can't help anyone else if you're passed out or dead. So be as strong and oxygenated as you can be so you can spread breath on everyone else. So that's the whole point.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this today, love. And I do love the work that you're doing and the courage and the strength that it took to do it. And I know your daughter is with you full force. And the impact that you're going to have on lives is going to be massive. And I'm going to have you back on again. And we're going to talk, you know, another level of this. So thank you so much for having the strength and the courage to take this path.
You are welcome, and thank you so much for having me. It was really an honor to be on your show.
A pleasure to have you, my dear. So, folks, remember, don't judge. Don't assume that you know everything. Ask, learn, and forget about stigma. You know, when we face something, whether we are the addict or the parents of addicts, we have to step up and look at what can we do to empower ourselves so we can empower others. So reach out to Valerie. She's been there. She's done that. She's got the tools for you, and she's just waiting for you to take the action. So until next time, folks, bye for now.